I'm Ellen Mary.
And I'm Michael Perry.
And he's a plant geek.
And she's a plant addict.
And this is the Plant-Based Podcast.
This is more than just a gardening podcast. We'll be exploring the world of plants from every possible angle. We'll be talking about plant-based diets, plant materials and fabrics, the well-being qualities of plants, and giving plenty of gardening tips and tricks.
So we'll be chatting worldwide to companies and individuals that are being creative with plants in new and exciting ways, from fabulous flower crowns to foliage-filled lounges,
botanical moisturizers to bamboo clothing.
It's all here.
And it's all made of plants.
This episode of the Plant-Based Podcast is brought to you by our friends at VeggiePod. Their integrated raised vegetable garden bed kit makes growing vegetables easy for everyone. With self-watering features and protective canopy, with VeggiePod, you'll be harvesting your own produce in no time. Available in three sizes to suit any garden. Visit veggiepod.co.uk and enter PBP10 for a special discount as a PBP subscriber.
For this podcast episode, I've been let loose with the microphone, cut free from Michael Perry, and given the reins all by myself. So I figured, having been given such great responsibility, I'd better go big. And I figured the Royal Botanic Garden in Sydney was just about as big a gig as I could get. So I hopped on over to Australia. Obviously, please do make sure Michael knows if you really enjoy this episode. It's good to keep the pressure on him for when he's allowed free rein. So today I am sitting in the sunshine. It's a lovely warm day. The skies are blue and I'm at the Sydney Botanic Garden. Royal Botanic Garden, of course. And it's probably one of... Yeah, it is actually my favourite botanic garden that I've been to in the whole world. Partly because of the views. It's right on the water's edge and it gives it a whole different dynamic. But it's super beautiful. And also because it actually, there's many plants here that really do remind me of Britain. And then there's many, many, many others that I have no idea what they are. So it's quite an educational experience as well. So I'm here with Jimmy Turner. And Jimmy is the director of horticulture at Royal Sydney Botanic Garden and also Blue Mountain Botanic Garden, Australia Botanic Garden, and there's one more.
Centennial Parklands.
So kind of a big job. I feel very privileged to be here in Jimmy's company, believe me. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me today.
It's more than a pleasure. And we've already been chatting about, you know, the Sydney life, if you like, plant-based eating, all kinds of things. So we're going to go over a few of those again so our listeners can get a feel for how you got involved in horticulture in the first place. And for you, it started when you were really young, didn't it?
It started for me when I was really young. And if you notice, this is not an Australian accent. I grew up in East Texas in farmland country. My parents are big gardeners and farmers. My grandparents owned a farm. I knew from my earliest age I wanted to be a horticulturist, a gardener. I actually told my first grade teacher I wanted to be a horticulturist, and she didn't know what it was. And I got a note back to my mother. When I went to undergraduate school and told my university professor I want a degree in horticulture, he's like, you'll change your mind. Nobody actually ever graduates. And he looked at him and said, yes, I will. No, I won't. Yes, I will. So I looked at him and said, I'll tell you what, I'll bet you a bottle of whatever your favorite alcohol is. So 4 years later, when I graduated, he was actually on the stage and handed me a bottle of Macallan Scotch as I walked across the stage. This is not a career. It's a calling. People who do horticulture for a living like I do, it's not a job. We get paid to do what we love. It's our midlife crisis. It's our hobby. It's our obsession. It's our drug.
It's everything.
It's everything. You know, if you marry one of us, I'm sorry. You're going to see every plant in the world. You're going to go to every botanic garden in the world. You know, unfortunately, you'll be somewhat second in the love department. As my partner says.
This is true.
It's very true. And it should be a warning label on us. You know, warning, side effects. You may be left in the garden while someone takes photographs for an hour and ignores warns you. You may be running off the road. You know, the car may stop at light speed to go take a photo of something in the ditch.
Honestly, we are moving house, and I was really concerned about my plants going from one environment to another environment. And my husband said to me, anyone would think you love your plants more than me. But he was really genuinely concerned about that. And I was kind of like, it's a close call.
I love you, dear, but... But it really has been my lifelong calling. I got here to Sydney Botanic Garden through a very kind of convoluted way. I've always worked in horticulture, worked in every field. I was at the Dallas Arboretum and Botanic Garden in Dallas, Texas for 10 years and got a phone call one day and said, would you like to interview for a role at the Royal Botanic Garden Sydney as director? And I went, free vacation in Sydney for a week. And I came here, had never been to Australia before, and fell in love with it. I really have one of the best jobs in horticulture in the world, where I've got the Royal Botanic Garden Sydney, which is the oldest scientific institution in Australia. We're right on the harbor's edge. It's also the first place that white folk grew, or Europeans came here and grew corn. This is the original farm for the first settlers to Australia. So we've got this original history, the scientific history. This garden is just layers and layers of stories. Then I've got the Australian Botanic Garden, Mount Anna, which is the largest botanic garden in Australia. It's about an hour and a half west of Sydney. And it's our space where we have our seed bank, which we have the largest seed bank in the Southern Hemisphere. It's the most biodiverse spot in Australia. We do a lot of conservation work there. It's really just one of those really cool gardens. It's all about natives. So coming here from America like you, there's all these plants we can grow because Australia has the best climate for growing plants. You should get there and there's all these native plants, and I just walk around with my mouth up and going, I'm supposed to know what I'm doing. I'm the director of horticulture. I was like, what the hell is this plant? I don't even know what plant family is. You know, I'd walk around and feel stupid, which is wonderful. Then we have the Blue Mountains Botanic Garden, which is up in really the highest elevation botanic garden in Australia. And it sits on top of a mountain. And it's basically a little bit of Britain in Australia. It's that beautiful UK, misty, cool climate, never too hot, never too cold. I mean, dahlias are weeds there, so it's just this amazing climate. Peonies are in bloom there right now, and they're bigger than my head, and they're only 2 years old, and they've already got, you know, three times the size they should. It's just an amazing sight. Then I've got the Centennial Parklands, which is the largest park in Australia, and it's Centennial Park, Moore Park, and Queen's Park, so we've got a whole bunch of them there, but it's the number one sporting district for all of Australia. It's got 35 million visitors a year, so it's just a very loved local site. So it's
This is a big job.
It's a big job. Some days I keep wondering, how did I get this job? It's a bit overwhelming some days, but the great thing is I have 160-some-odd horticulture staff across all the organization, and I went into this career to love plants, but the truth is what I really do is I mentor people, I look at budgets, and I just write my signature on pieces of paper all day long. But here the plant opportunities are just absolutely overwhelming. And Sydney, you know, is just not too hot, not too cold, great soils. As you said, you can see things here from the UK and parts of the world. I have plants here. It's like, I didn't know that plant existed. You know, giant dandelion from Canary Islands. Okay. Where has this been all my entire life? So every day here is a learning day if you're a plant person.
I think every day is a learning day if you're in horticulture, isn't it? No matter what you do, wherever you are, and lots of people will say, oh, you're an expert, and I'm no expert.
No.
I don't know that anyone is actually an expert. I think you can be an expert in a certain field or to do with a certain species, but if you're a horticulturalist overall, how can you be an expert? Because there is so much to learn all of the time.
There is, and I've never been good at specialization. There's a Robert Heinlein quote, specialization is for insects. And the number one question you could ask in this career is, what is your specialty? What's your area of study? And it's like, I couldn't tell you. I think most people who kind of do what we do at this level, you fall in love with a different plant family every month, every year.
Yeah.
You know, you're into food crops, you're into dahlias, you're into xeric plants, you're into orchids, you're into bromeliads. I mean, you know, I'm a little too ADHD in horticulture to have a specialization. I'm a good generalist.
I'm into orchids when I'm in Singapore.
yes.
Aren't they absolutely beyond special? I can be into something different depending on where I am.
It's always, you know, what's in front of you. What are you learning about that moment? You know, I sometimes find something I want to learn a bit more. But the reason I'm on Instagram, Twitter, and all that, some people say, what do you do that for? And it's like, it's my learning thing. I said, if I write it and post it and share it with people, then it's stuck in my head. And it's how I've learned Australian native plants. When I got here, I thought I knew a few Australian native plants. No, trust me. They don't collect the good stuff out of the country. The things you think you've seen, you haven't seen the amazing flora of this country, which is just how I learned that. Take a photo of it, look it up, write a few things, put it online, share it with a few thousand people, and and you have a conversation. But it's all about that constant learning.
Yeah, it's interesting because social media has had a bad rap in the past, but for horticulture, it's an amazing community. Everyone's super friendly and very helpful. And I've often been out and about here in Australia or anywhere else, and I've seen a plant or a tree, and I've kind of taken a photo and I've looked down, and I don't know what that is. I'm going to go away and ID it, and I might be about to post it and say, "What is this? Does anyone know?" And then I'll be flicking through, and there it is. Someone else has posted it, and that's it. That's the one. That's the one I've been looking for. It's educational.
It's very educational. I think there's also this fear of not knowing or not being capable of naming something. I'm director of horticulture for the Royal Botanic Garden City. I'm supposed to know stuff. But quite often I'll take a photo of something and people laugh at me and say, "You have no fear of posting hashtag plant ID, putting it on my Twitter feed and going and Instagram and Facebook and go, hey, who knows what it is? I'm sorry. I just don't have it in my brain." And the great thing is I'll find some 70-year-old botanist somewhere who's dedicated his whole life to that plant family, or some gardener who knows more about it. Or half the time, "Oh yeah, I actually planted that tree in that parkland 50 years ago."
Wow.
And it's a great way of, you know, community and people sharing information, and it's, you know, that's how you learn.
Couldn't agree more. Okay, so now we've done social media and we love it. Let's talk about what it's like for in a week for you. So I know obviously we've arranged today's meeting based upon a load of other stuff that you've been doing this week. So you've got all of these amazing spaces, you know, to manage. That's massive. But what does a week look like?
A week looks like for me, actually, I've got a great staff who handles a lot of the day-to-day details, but my job mainly is I'm air traffic controller. So once every 2 weeks, I try to see all sites. So I actually go around because you expect what you inspect, and I have a pretty strong aesthetic of what I like and don't like. My guys can tell you from 100 yards when I cross my arms and purse my lips and pull my glasses down. It's like, "Oh, crap, we're going to have to change something." But I spend more than three quarters of my week is in meetings because we work for government, and there's always a lot of meetings, discuss this, discuss that, strategy, looking to the future, budgeting. But you take all that out, my life really is spent. Staff management is about a third of my week, making sure my staff get what they need and taken care of. Budgeting, which I actually like. I'm a weirdo. I actually love Excel and numbers. So I'm the oddball.
Okay, we're done here now.
I love playing with an Excel spreadsheet. I designed the green wall, and the Calyx you just saw was designed with a spreadsheet. So I absolutely love a spreadsheet. I'm all about my budget and my money because I want every penny to be spent on something in the garden. I waste no money on the table. I treat our budget like I treat my own money. Buy plants. So budget management. And the other one really is working. My job is to be strategic, looking at the next year, 2 years out. So I'm actually working with my architect, my landscape designer, my curators of the sites, what's happening next, approving that, trying to figure out how I can get funding for that, how I can get our foundation or development team to raise money for that, or to sell our vision, or I'm working on giving information to government about the importance of green space. So a lot of times my job is to be the face of the garden.
Yeah.
Either I'm stuck at a desk, typing away at my computer, or I'm running frantically through the garden, pointing things out and giving a do list that makes people panic and run.
And then folding your arms and pursing your lips.
Yes.
But you do you get any time to actually garden yourself?
Unfortunately, I live in Sydney, which is one of the most expensive housing markets in the world. And we live in a unit with two balconies, so I have about 13 pots in my back patio, which makes a huge amount of produce. So I'm very much about organic gardening in my patio. So at any given moment, every pot's overflowing with something. We try to produce as much as I have, but I really miss having a plot of land that's my own garden. I grew up on a farm. I grew up in the country, but the nearest area from Sydney is a 2.5-hour commute. And do I do what I love, or do I do what I love? So there always has to be a bit of a sacrifice. So one of my staff actually said it the other day. It's like, "You really love gardening." It's like, "Mm-hmm. But your form of gardening is to stand and point." And I'm like, "That's actually a good point. It actually runs in my family. My great-grandmother, my grandmother, and my mother all were masters of the point." "I don't like that over there. Could you change that? It looked better to the right. Or could you plant that over here?"
Oh, my gosh, you do it so well. And you were only just doing an example. You do get to put in some creativity, though, don't you? Because obviously I've been into the Plants with Bites exhibit. And I had there's some photographs on my Instagram about that. So, it's all carnivorous plants. It's fabulous. And there's a huge green wall behind it, which at the moment is just full of, what did I see in there? Begonias?
Begonias, Euchra, Ultramanthera.
Yeah,
Dichondra.
And it's fab. Lovely patterned wall. And you designed that?
Yes.
Right. So you get to add that bit of creativity.
I keep the creative bit. I have this bit that's my happy space, which is doing like the koala topiary here in the garden. That, and I have a belief that display horticulture gets a bad rap. Oh, it's just plants doing. But when you've, my job is to engage people in the importance of horticulture and plants.
Yeah.
Vital science. No plants, no wine. No plants, no beer. No plants, no food. No plants, no people. All those things are important, but I can't make someone love plants unless I make them appreciate it. And the way I make them appreciate it, you've got a 12-year-old girl with an Instagram who's taking pictures of herself. If I can make her stop in front of that wall for 5 minutes and take pictures of herself, she suddenly appreciated a plant slightly more, though, yeah, than anything else. And maybe I'm slightly building an understanding of what those plants were. And I have this belief I can build the most beautiful garden on the ground, but no one will take a photo. Put it on a green wall, make a topiary, make a great over-the-top, non-subtle display, and people will flock to it and take photos.
Yeah,
if I can get them to stand there long enough to take a photo, they might read those 120 words on a sign to say why plants are important, or just teaspoon them a little bit of that instead of doom and gloom. That's how we actually want to teach about plant conservation now. It's doom and gloom. We're all going to die. The planet's going to blow up. We'll all be dead in 10 years. People just ignore that. They don't listen. You have to make somebody love something to save something. You can't make them afraid of it.
Yeah.
So my viewpoint is this bit of creativity and weirdness and bright colors is just a way of getting people to love what we see and do every day. It's kind of part the Emerald Curtain. And
I think that's way more inspirational than maybe you even realize. Honestly, it very much is. You're right. There's a lot of doom and gloom, and we're all guilty of putting that message out there. But you're right. It's about sparking that little, like, just that little light where someone just goes, oh, that's pretty, or oh, that's nice. Oh, I might like that on my balcony, or oh, I could grow that in a pot. Just something really tiny, and you hope that then they get the bug.
Yeah. You know, annuals get a bit of bad rap or a lot. Oh, they're just short-lived and they're bright flowers. And here in Australia, they're not natives. And it's like, but if I can get someone who only has two flower pots in their front part of patio to grow two boring old geraniums or petunias and see the butterflies and the bees come to it, I have just made a plant advocate. I have just given that person the gateway drug to gardening.
Yeah.
And, you know, they'll evolve in their evolution out into full gardening or whatever level they can do. But it's just getting that one sense of success and that one sense of, oh, I am connected to nature.
Yeah.
And how do you do that? And sometimes you got to do something flashy. You don't invite somebody to dinner and go, oh, come to dinner night. We're having boiled Brussels stouts and and burnt rutabaga. No, you talk about the dessert and the alcohol, which is the two things that get people. And, you know, and then you feed them the healthy meal while they're not paying attention.
Whilst they're enjoying the wine.
Yes, it's kind of that same, it's how I look at botanic gardens. We've got this full smorgasbord of all this healthy well-being stuff and save the planet and conservation. But sometimes I've got to tease you in, you don't get your dessert unless you eat your peas.
I love that. I absolutely love that. And actually, I did have my picture taken next to the koala, the topiary koala. I was very proud.
This episode of the Plant-Based Podcast is brought to you by our friends at VeggiePod. Their integrated raised vegetable garden bed kit makes growing vegetables easy for everyone.
So also here at the garden, you do a lot of outreach work, don't you, to communities and schools and all kinds of things. Tell us a little bit about that.
So we have a very active education program, education department, that sits right now in a visitor experience. And we'll soon be moving to our science department, I believe. But our education group sees literally hundreds of thousands of children through our school groups every year. We have the Ian Potter Children's Wild Play Garden at Centennial Park, which is a get out and run through the bushes, beat on the bamboo, climb some sticks, fall over, get your knees dirty, which is back to that nature play. And we're probably one of the biggest proponents of the nature play here in Australia, which is very popular and the northern hemisphere, but it's getting that feeling here. You know, kids aren't actually in touch with the bush or aren't used to sticking their finger in something or actually getting to play
getting
with stuff.
Dirty.
Getting dirty, which is important. And here we actually have a science-based curriculum where we bring kids into the calyx and teach them about carnivorous plants, tying back to their curriculum. We do garden-based education, but probably my favorite program is our community greening, where we go out to communities in need, old folks home, low socioeconomic areas, and put in community greening gardens and show them how to garden, and then actually put a volunteer in charge and then leave it in their point. We go out to prisons. So it's about bringing the, you know, the health and well-being of gardening, because, you know, I'm preaching to the choir here with you, but, you know, people who are in those kind of needs, actually a garden builds a community. Having plants and something as a center space, Singapore is a master of it, but having that spot to go look at something bloom, grow, see nature, touch it, eat something you grew yourself, actually just makes your life better. And I think a lot of people have lost that in their life. I'll end up breaking up in tears if I think about it too much. But the whole world of therapeutic horticulture and community greening and community gardens is really just taking off in Australia.
It is in the UK. There is a lot more work to be done, but it is now coming back around. It's kind of skipped a generation or two. You know, my grandparents loved it. Actually, my parents did as well, but it wasn't a career as such. It wasn't intrinsic to every part of their life. And I think this kind of therapeutic benefits of gardening is now coming to the fore. And I personally think it's because we've been so absorbed in the digital world. We live in a digital world, and that's fine. That's fine. It's opened up horticulture across the world and many other industries and sectors, and we've learnt from it, and it's great in many ways. But we need like that kind of digital detox a little bit. And I think people are starting to go, okay, I've been so absorbed in this digital world. My head's not in the right space right now. Actually getting outside and putting the phone down, or, you know, getting away from the laptop is a really good thing for me. And I think it's about creating a balance. Because I use social media and I use IT all of the time, and I wouldn't be where I am today if I didn't. And so I love it for that reason. But it's about trying to teach the balance and how important nature is for us, and then using the digital world to spread that word.
To spread that word and to learn more.
Yeah.
I'm addicted to social media. I have a huge Twitter following, and I love feeding that and communicating with it, but probably my happiest moment in the garden, I'll tell you a little cute story. The calyx here, carnivorous plants. We built a 3D augmented reality app to go with the thing so kids could actually see a Venus flytrap cartoon version eating a fly, or one drowning in a pitcher plant or in an Nepenthes. And it took off for the first week, and then it's like nobody's downloading it, or they're downloading it, but they're not watching it. Why is it not happening? So we started asking the volunteers, like, the kids don't really care about it. So we all thought the kids would absolutely do this and ignore the plants. They're much more interested in watching that Venus flytrap close in reality, and it's like, see, it does work.
It does work.
You know, the real version is always better than the made-up version. And I think, you know, it's there for the information, to look up stuff, do stuff later, but it's not the only portal to the world. And I think a lot of people, and, you know, things go in cycles. And I think the cycle's been, you know, everything's absorbed into your phone. But I think, you know, people do appreciate nature for nature, and you just get overwhelmed in it. And the best thing I can see is when people here in the garden taking pictures of stuff, and then when they suddenly just realize, I'm just going to sit here on the bench, look at the harbor, and just relax. And
I couldn't agree more.
You know, you can walk through the garden and see, relaxed, on his work break, on his laptop, but actually sitting in the grass, relaxed, not in his office. It's, you know, a special place, I think.
It's interesting how you said that you could literally just tear, you know, you could cry when you talk about it. The other day I was doing an article, and it was about our connection with nature and how we've kind of lost it and da-da-da. And I thought back to my childhood, and I was writing something about my childhood, and I got really emotional. And I actually had to stop writing, walk away, have a glass of water, come back to it. Because our connection with nature is so strong that actually when you really think about it, it really grabs you. It really grabs you by the heartstrings, and you think, wow, you know, this is intrinsic to our being on the planet.
It's intrinsic to our being, it's intrinsic to us as a family. I actually think back to my early gardening memories, and they're always tied to someone in my family teaching me something or doing something with them. So it's just that whole, you know, and I think food is kind of the same thing. Mm-hmm. Food has that very strong, and food and gardening, when you put all three of those together, it just, you know, if you want to make me cry, just start talking about going out and cooking with my great-grandmother or my grandmother's or my mother, and gardening just makes me, you know, it's my happiest place in life.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you ask me, would I want to go on some great tour, or would I want to go spend another day with my grandmother in the kitchen in the garden? Tell you right now.
Hands down.
Yeah,
hands down.
Eating fried chicken and all the stuff from the garden, and fresh tomatoes from my grandmother's garden.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's why it's so, so important to be gardening with your children, and to why schools, it's so important to get kids into gardening at a really young age. Really interesting. So, now let's talk about the garden and the plants here. So there are a squillion that I have no idea what they are, and I go away and try and ID them myself. But you can probably tell me what we've got going on around us.
We have lots of things going around us, and I'll tell you a little thing. We'll go back to the digital age for the moment. One of the things I had installed in the garden a couple of years ago, because I do believe that digital information is important and people being able to actually experience and understand where they're at. If you go to Garden Explorer, the website, and RBG Sydney Garden Explorer, every plant in this garden is GPS tagged on there. It actually tells you where you are and the plant that's next to you and what it is or what's in that bed. You can click on the button, it shows you a picture. If you want to find something, search for it, and you can walk right to it.
Hold on, this is like serious plant geek stuff. I'm going to be here all day now you've told me that. I have work to do.
All of our sites have it. It's actually based on a program out of the UK, Iris BG, which is our plant accession. So a botanic garden to be a botanic garden is a living collection of plants for scientific purpose. So every plant we need to know where it came from, how we got it, when it was planted, where it's at. It's really kind of a living zoo of plants or an art gallery of plants that I have to know. Because at any moment, we may need to supply seeds of that tree over there back to the wild, which we have here. We have several plants here. We've sent seeds back to their native habitat because they're either threatened or we've got a different accession, which has a different genome than the one they've got there.
Yeah.
So it's about safeguarding those plants' future, but also a beautiful place to come relax. But one of the things I wanted was people to be able to know what they're looking at, because I can't put a label on everything because it ends up looking like a cemetery.
Yeah.
But Sydney, we have an amazing collection here, 200 years of horticulture. And this botanic garden, like all the old great gardens of the UK, was started as an economic driver. It was they were looking at planting things in Sydney to see how they would grow in Australia, to grow for timber, for food, for medicine, and looking at the Australian plants to ship outside the rest of the world for economic reasons. So we have this old part of the gardens from the 1800s called the Middle Gardens, which has still got plants planted in there from the early 1800s that were part of that time, that were all wild source, local, and exotic. Even some from Texas. I was walking over there today, and there's a native Texas tree over there going, what the heck is this doing here?
It's because you're here.
It was planted over here in the 1800s as a possible timber tree.
Yeah.
So it's these great stories to tell. But Sydney climate is where subtropical for the most part.
Yeah.
So we're not too hot, not too cold. We get decent rainfall. So in this garden, you can see plants from pretty much every continent in the world.
Yeah.
We're about 80% exotic, 20% native here on the Sydney site. The site's been gardened so much that the Australian plants actually don't like it anymore because they don't like high phosphorus. Australia is such an old continent. There's not a lot of phosphorus in the soil.
Okay.
And most of the plants aren't adapted to high phosphorus soils. But gardening does that to the soil. So unfortunately, some of my areas here, I can't grow as many natives of hemp, which is why we have the Australian Botanic Garden. But some great things about this garden. We have one of the largest palm collections in the world because Joseph Made, one of our early directors, loved palm trees. And so we have a huge palm collection. We have a huge collection of rainforest species from around the world, a lot of South American. Probably one of my favorite collections is our cycad collection, which we have a huge collection of that. I have to admit, I look at them and my eyes cross and they all look the same, but I have a couple of extra staff. And speaking of children.
Yeah, speaking of children, we have a school trip that's just kind of joined us. We're sitting outside the Calyx right now and they're coming in. I think they're probably going to have a look at the plants with bite exhibition. So all of those lovely carnivorous plants are the plants that kids really do enjoy seeing, don't they? I've got to just say they look so cute. With their little hats on.
Their little uniforms and their hats. And every school has a different uniform and a different hat.
It looks so, so cute. And it's lovely to see them here and being outside, you know, and enjoying plants as well. So, cute. Oh, okay, yes, sorry. So, what plans have you got for the garden going forward?
So my biggest project I've been working on for 6 years, and we're about to finalize that, is working on a new living collection strategy, which is actually looking at what are we going to collect, what are we going to do in the garden, what do we want to focus on for the next 200 years, because we're 203 years old now. So that'll be my legacy for the garden going forward. So we have a lot of things we've had in the past, but this is not just for this site, it's for all three sites. Is what do we want to focus on? And one of the things I'm looking at is what parts of the world are under conservation threat, you know, that already don't have a really good botanic garden taking care of them.
Yeah.
Kew has, you know, Madagascar taken care of. So do I need to do Madagascar? No. But there's a lot of South American. South America is really underdeveloped. A lot of Australian areas are undeveloped. Quite a few of the Pacific Islands, which we can grow really well. So there's
all. Sorry, we now have an aeroplane as well.
Yes. Welcome to Sydney. It's either a helicopter, an airplane, or a screaming kid, or you can hear the ibis in the background begging its mother for food. So really looking at what communities in the world are under threat. And will they grow well here? And if they will grow well here, can we actually put them here and keep them in conservation status and actually make the garden beautiful, but also actually have plants with a purpose? So we're just now finishing that up. I have that done in the next 6 months, and then the garden will start to develop new planting areas, change over others, interplant it in new areas. So 200-year-old garden will get a little bit of a facelift.
Yeah, high
fantastic. And is that controversial? Will people be happy about it?
There's a bit of controversy. There's a belief that there's a bit of misunderstanding locally. The garden is seen as a parkland because we're free. Most all Australian botanic gardens are free to the public. The government made that happen years ago. We're 40% funded by the government, 60% self-funded. But a botanic garden isn't a parkland. You can use it like a parkland. You can use it to picnic. You can come here and check out. But the truth is, it is here for conservation purposes. And it's a living, breathing organism that has to change over time. And there's a lot of people who want the garden preserved as it was in the 1800s and never change. We should keep it as a bit of Australian history. And we can do a lot of that. There's Aboriginal history here, pre-European. There's a lot of early European history because Government House is here. It's the first place that the European settlers grew corn and actually settled at. We have to honor those and the original pathways and original design from original directors, but the actual plant collections itself, my original directors would roll in the grave. We wouldn't be a botanic garden if we didn't continue to grow in that and do what our core purpose is, conservation of plants and appreciation of plants and educating the public. And I have to grow with that. And it's doing it sensitively. It's like, okay, the palm grove is never going to change. It's always going to be a palm grove. It's always going to be expanded and grown and more done there. But there's all the space underneath it that can be, you know, the begonias of South America that need conserving. Because we have this great climate where I can keep things. But it's just adding the right layers in the right places. It's, you know, I'm not changing the house. I'm just putting a different throw pillow on the couch.
Sure.
So it's, you know, doing it sensitively and also honoring our history. But also, sometimes things just have to be pulled out. There's things we have here in the garden that just never made sense. Somebody planted. Sometimes gardening doesn't work, and sometimes botanic gardens make mistakes. And we have a few historical plantings here. It's like, that's never going to grow well here. We tried it. They're suffering.
It doesn't work.
Let's move it somewhere else and put something better in that site. So,
it's exciting.
It's gardening.
It's constantly evolving all of the time. It never stays the same. Mm-hmm. In fact, before we were recording, we were talking about that, and you said that the garden isn't exactly where you want it to be just yet. And I said to you, is it ever going to be? Because as a gardener, is your garden or wherever you work, is it ever really exactly where you want it to be? You know, because it's you're always discovering more plants or things are changing, you know, and it evolves. And I don't think I've ever been 100% happy with
any
my garden.
Somebody's writing HBI in a... Oh, I don't know what they're writing, but there's a sky writer in the air writing something.
So far it says HB... Oh... Right.
We'll find out in a minute. Gardening is an evolution. There is no end point in gardening. Landscaping has a start and finish and done. And anybody who says their garden's done is just landscaped. A true gardener is never done. Both my grandmothers lived to be 100. My great-grandmother lived to be 101. And I think the secret to their life was they were waiting to see what was going to bloom, grow. Every day they had to go in the garden to see what was there or be told. If they couldn't get out of bed, we had to tell them or bring it in. Your garden is part of you. When you build something like that, it becomes part of your life. And doing what I do, this garden is my garden. And my staff say it's their garden, as they should. When you garden, you own it, and it owns you. But I think that it's a constant evolution, and it's never done. Am I happy where this garden's gotten? We've done a lot of things in 6 years to actually improve this garden, in my opinion. There's a bit more to be where I think before I would be willing to like walk away and say, okay, someone else can have it now. It's my baby, and you know, I just need to get it where it can stand on its own feet.
Okay.
And it's headed in the right direction. But gardens are never done. Anybody ever says your gardens are done, you're probably either in the grave or you're not a gardener.
I love that. Okay, so in the garden, there's lots of different areas. There's like the rose garden, isn't there? Is it rose garden up there?
Yeah.
Herb garden. There's all kinds of different spaces.
Yes.
And I noticed that you're developing a wildflower meadow as well.
Yes.
So obviously part of it's already blooming, but lots are covered by nets as the seeds grow.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to look beautiful.
We did that a couple of years ago because we had a bare space and I like flowers.
No kidding.
And pollinators are very topical and very important. Bees, butterflies, native bees. We have actually our own beehives here we sell the honey from. We have several native beehives on property, and we're putting more of those in. But I wanted to do a wildflower meadow just because I thought people would enjoy it, and it would give people a place to kind of go in and be surrounded by flowers. And I want a small path. So my former curator and I kind of came up with this area that had nothing in it. So we'll just till up the grass, throw in some boring zinnia, cosmos, marigolds, gardenia seeds, not native to Australia, some rhodanthes native to Australia, some paper daisies, and see what happens, see how the public engages with it. And I'll be, looks like weeds. It kicked into bloom. It's like, oh my God, there's people standing in line to get in and take their photo. There's 20-year-old kids laying in there with their earphones on. There's people chasing the butterflies. The education groups are all going down there. So it was a really kind of a similar moment for a lot of the people who work in the garden who didn't understand my aesthetic and the way I like to engage people with horticulture, like, oh, you do kind of know how to engage people, and people do engage with this kind of stuff. And now I think it's going to be a permanent planting. It's probably never going to go away.
That's good news.
And we'll be building a big bee hotel down there, putting some native beehives. I've actually got a sandstone bee I want to carve. I just really want to talk about pollination. And okay. Said thing, come look at the flowers, and I'm going to teaspoon you a little bit of science and horticulture.
A little bit too.
So.
That's a great way of promoting it and getting people involved. Do you have a favorite part of the garden?
Oh.
Sorry. I'm really sorry.
That's just cheeky.
Oh, hold on a minute. HBD and a heart. Does that mean like happy birthday? It's not your birthday, is
not
it?
Birthday,
it's not mine either. So the message is not for us. Okay. Anyway, yeah, sorry.
Favorite part of the garden. Ooh. Really depends on the day. Kind of like asking me my favorite plant. Favorite part of the garden. Probably whatever part of the garden I'm working on. Depends on my mood. I would say the spot of the garden where if I want to go calm down and check out would be the fernery. This nice. Beautiful, deep, mossy green.
Yeah,
you're surrounded
lovely.
And the sound of water, and it's just a great place to go chill. To go be plant geeky is the trial garden, which I just put in 2 years ago, which I just love all the new varieties of plants and talking about that and engaging with the public. So that gets my plant geek on. Favorite place in the garden in the evening to come have a glass of champagne. My partner and I live close, and we quite often sneak into the garden because I have keys, is any one of the benches overlooking the harbor or the opera house.
Yeah,
and looking
at
the view in this garden at night, the stars and the smell, and it's perfectly quiet. It's just a great place to check out. Sorry, I get to do that special. Nobody else does.
You're allowed. You're allowed.
Oh, and there's got to be another one. Let's see. I would probably say the herb garden because I'm a bit of a cook in a herb garden, and I'm always finding something new in there I didn't know we have. My staff over there are always surprising me with new plantings, going, oh, what's this member of the Acanthaceae family that tastes like mushrooms? I keep waiting for it to grow enough I can nibble a bite off of it. So it's always, you know, always a discovery for me, though.
It's just a beautiful garden. I love the fact that it's very open, so you can sit out on the grass and just look out. The views are spectacular, but then you can also hide away, can't you, amongst the trees. The palms, there are so many, and they are so very beautiful. But also for me, I get a little touch of England in here as well, and I love that. You know,
remember, we were originally designed and grown by English gardeners who came here. Some of our earliest gardeners here and earliest directors were direct transplants. So it's got that very English feel, some of the layout, the rolling hills, the garden-esque, and the picturesque style it was designed in were both English style, you know, grand estates, botanic garden design. So this garden still has that original stylistic of gardening, which we still try to honor with all our new plantings. But I also think it's interesting, we're probably one of the most visited botanic gardens in the world. 5.5 million visitors a year come to this garden.
Do you think that's partly because it's free as well?
I definitely think it's because it's free, which has a wear and tear in the garden. But with that many visitors, this garden never seems that crowded.
No, that's right. That's a lot of people, but you can always find your own space.
You can always find a spot where you're in your own little area and you're quiet. You might have somebody pass by, but you've got your spot. You never feel crowded here. And it's just an amazing thing to me that this garden is so well designed. Designed in the 1800s, and that design has held up for 200 years. It really was meant to have spaces, and a good garden, botanic garden, in my opinion, you've got to have those open spaces and closed spaces. That's what us as humans enjoy, is the dichotomy of the dark and cool to the open and sunny with the long vistas. And it was really done well 200 years ago, and it's just my job to make sure nobody screws it up.
No pressure then. It's been an absolute pleasure being here with you. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I think what you're doing here is absolutely inspirational, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm going to go and download that app and get my plant geek on now. I'm going to be here for way longer than I had anticipated because I have got work to do today, but I don't think that's going to happen now. If you ever get the chance to visit Sydney, the city itself is actually fantastic. It's a great place to be. But the Botanic Garden here is really phenomenal. And I agree with you. It is genuinely one of the best in the world. So you do have the best job in the world.
I really think I do.
And thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
If you would like to follow Jimmy on Instagram, Twitter, are you on Facebook?
Yes, I am.
It's Texan in Oz.
yes.
Love that. Texan in Oz. And also you can follow the Botanic Garden as well. I think it's RBG
Sydney,
Twitter, Facebook and Instagram as well, where there's always loads of photographs of the plants that are growing here. It's really educational, really fun as well. And you get to experience this beautiful garden via the wonderful world of social media. But if you do get the chance to ever come and see it for real, please do. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Come back anytime.
Hey, MP.
Hey, MP. Oh, no.
I'm not MP.
Stole your line. Damn it. AEW.
Don't steal my line. EM, do you mean?
What?
EM, not EW.
EM, it sounds like a disease.
Oh.
Mary Ellen.
No. We can talk about that if you like. My name is Ellen Mary, not Mary Ellen.
I can't believe how many times people get your name wrong. It's the same as when people call me Mike. It's like, you can see it doesn't say Mike. What are you doing? Jesus. I'll don't bleep out the Jesus.
I just think if you email someone and it's, you know, thank you Ellen, from Ellen Mary, website Ellen Mary Gardening, and then they reply, hi Mary.
Oh, you made me laugh, darling.
Anyway.
Oh, I'm sorry. I know we've got an agenda, but there's something I forgot to tell you.
Yeah.
I was interviewed this morning on the Plant Daddy podcast.
Cool.
Yeah, just so you know.
That's very cool.
I gave a little plug for plant-based podcast. Don't worry.
That's nice. When will it be out, released?
I think it's next couple of weeks, actually.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's a great podcast. And this evening, I'm being interviewed by the Veg Grower podcast.
Oh my gosh, there's so many secrets tumbling out the bag all over the place.
I actually messaged you that the other day to tell you.
Did you?
Yeah, I messaged you and Holly.
Crapola. Did you really?
Yes.
Oh my god. I tell you what, because at the moment I'm in China and like when I don't get messages real time, they don't go in my brain in the same way.
Because you're like, in China?
Yeah.
Makes all the difference. Because being in another country makes all the difference.
No, because you tend to like, you get up in the morning, you're catching up on maybe 10 messages and they don't go in your brain the same as if they were coming, you know, one by one,
okay.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
Yeah, or maybe I'm just thick.
Well, I didn't like to say, but you know.
Oh, ding dong.
Ding, ding dong. Talking of which, how long are you in China for?
Because as you know, and other people might know, is my partner Rafael works in China, so I am out here kind of whenever I've got downtime, and in the autumn is the time of year where I'm not really needed for anything face to face, so I've been here maybe 2-3 weeks, and we got an apartment here, so there's nice to check the house plans again. And I'm here till mid-December.
Okay,
so, yeah.
Cool. And then back in
very
the UK?
Very much living day-to-day life. Sorry, darling.
And then are you back in the UK?
Yes. We start off QVC shows on the 4th of Jan.
Right.
So then I'll be in the UK for a few months, kind of here and there, different trips. You know, it's a crazy schedule. And that wasn't distortion on the line, it was my yawning.
I was going to say, is this boring you?
Guess what I'm doing at the weekend, though?
What are you doing?
We got some friends here, and one of our friends runs a yoga studio, and she's doing a Christmas fair. And she was like, oh, do you want a table to sell some stuff? And of course, because I'm stupid, I just said yes. It's like, well, what am I going to sell? You know, I should really stop saying yes to everything, you know? But I've ordered some Plant Geek badges, which you can see here, which are being displayed on a fiddle leaf fig
They're
rather
super
than chipboard.
Cute. Love them. Love them.
And they're actually super sized because we, I think between, you know, a lot gets lost in translation in China. So these are supposed to be 2 centimeters, but I think they're 2 inches. So, yeah, but they're pretty cute anyway. So they'll be there on sale. And also, I've been to the plant nurseries and bought a load of plants today. So, yeah, wholesale nurseries, bought some cool plants, going to do some cool, labels.
Couldn't think of a cool thing to call a label. That is exciting though. Have you ever done one before?
No, I've done a car boot sale.
Oh, so this is not quite
the
same.
Is that the same or not?
No, not exactly. But that's pretty cool.
I'm just selling plants, really.
I know, but that's fun. So you had to go out to the nursery and pick what you wanted to sell and all that kind of thing. What are the nurseries like out there? You know, when you kind of enter in a world of like wholesale plants, what's it like in China?
Really cool, but I'm thinking about the plants now. I've got them out on the balcony and I unpacked them all, and I'm sure she didn't give me the Fittonias.
But
I think like you've got to be really adept here to not be conned and to like get the best deal out of stuff. And I think I got a really good deal on the plants I bought from that store, but I think she's got one over on me by not giving me my Fittonias.
You've been conned. Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. Sorry, I was in a houseplant haze. What was your question?
What are the wholesalers like? But I think you've just answered that question.
Oh, it is. And I can usually book taxis through an app, but today it wasn't working for some reason, and kind of like, and the announcements sometimes, I mean, it's a challenge being in China because like you can translate the language like with the Google overlay and stuff, but sometimes it just fails. So you have to kind of be kind of super patient and realize that not everything will always run smoothly. So it's a great character building exercise anyway.
Okay.
So the taxi screwed up, but then somehow the taxi I ordered appeared, but it wasn't through the app. I don't even know what was happening. And because it wasn't working in the app, like he wasn't then going to take me. So it was like I was going to then be abandoned there with my plants on the side of the road. It was all a bit weird. And then we kind of like did a deal. So I was like, well, I'll just pay you my own money, you know, the same price as a taxi would be.
Yeah.
And so like we load up, I get in the car, and he's like, you know, like, what's your address, blah, blah. So I show him my address in Mandarin and like blah, blah, blah. And then I'm kind of like, before you know, obviously in a foreign country, especially you have to be careful to check the price before you then drive off. So I was kind of like, okay, so this is going to be 50, you know, which is the same price as it was in the app sort of thing. And I show him 50 on the calculator app. And he's kind of like, and then he taps into it. And he's like, and he puts 100.
Oh.
And I'm kind of like, no, mate, no, that's not it. And so I then give it back to him. I'm kind of like, I'm thinking like, he's helped me out of a hole. You know, we're kind of here. I was finding it difficult to get the taxi app to work anyway. So I put in 70. And so I was like, so I'm offering him like 70 for it. And he was kind of like, yeah, okay. And I think he was like really excited and kind of like stimulated that I would do a deal with him. So he like agreed to it. But yeah, you just got to have your wits about you, because it's, when you're working with different currency, it's easy to kind of like be confused. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Also, when you're kind of in a relatively unknown environment, you don't always make the clearest decision, do you? Because there is that kind of slight worry. Well, what if I do get stuck here? What if another taxi doesn't come past? I really need to get back, and you're in a different country. So you kind of like, I think you make different type of decisions, don't you?
I know, it's crazy. So I hate it, but I love it as well, you know?
Yeah. Well, when you come back, you always say you miss it. When you're here, you always say, oh,
I guess
it.
So. There's a lot of things that make it frustrating, but a lot of things that also give you a lot of convenience as well in the life. So,
Like your hot water.
It's nice to be in different environments.
Like your hot water, your tap, the hot water thing that you just showed me.
I know. It's just a little machine which has a button for hot water, which is somehow so much easier than a kettle.
Easy
Ellen,
living.
Ellen.
Well, it's slightly weird how I feel like I'm morphing into you somewhat, because I'm going to spend, again, kind of like the winter months in America, because that's when there's not so much going on here, like you just said, face to face.
Yeah.
And then I'll just go back and forward a little bit throughout the summer when I have the odd week spare
that's
as
cool.
well. So, it's interesting and fun times. But I think we've said this before, that having those opportunities, that's really exciting. And if you're able to do it, you know, then you've got to go for it, because it's an adventure and experience, and it is, you know, learning about other cultures is
It's really important, I think, and especially in the plant world. You know, wherever I travel to, I learn so much from amazing people and seeing new species and varieties that you don't see here, you know, in the UK. And it just kind of expands your knowledge. And then I love being able to then come back and show other people that, you know, and teach other people
Kind of stuff. I think it's character building as well, because, you know, I used to have a very kind of local life, you know, when I was, you know, working in Suffolk and living in Suffolk. But kind of since then, I've been traveling a lot more and, you know, 4 years with a partner, we never lived in the same country all the time. You know? So it's kind of, when you look back on that, it seems a bit crazy, but kind of that's just opened me up so much, not just in personality and what you are tolerant of and what you're understanding to, but also kind of from a business aspect as well, because, you know, same for you, you'll be getting different job opportunities in the US.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, I'm selling these plants at the weekend here in China. Yeah, so it's kind of, you just got to push yourself into stuff, and it kind of makes it so much more exciting and just...
I think so. Yeah. And it's a little bit unknown, and I kind of like that. And then I've already got a few little jobs in America anyway, so I'd had some people contact me to do some work in America last year, and it didn't fit in and I couldn't do it. But now I know I'm going to be there. I've just been back in touch with them, so actually, you know, I'm going to be over in America. Yeah. So there's some really exciting stuff going on in the US as well.
What do you think you would miss, though?
What do I think I would miss from here in the UK?
Yeah.
I actually love the UK. I love the UK. So whenever I go away, I love going, I love learning new stuff. It's amazing. But I love coming back to the UK. And I think we don't realise just how lucky we are here. Like, we are really lucky in the UK for so many reasons. For me, actually, sometimes when I travel, the food can be an issue because obviously I'm plant-based, I'm vegan. Yeah. So,
you struggle in China.
It can be really, really difficult, and I never have a problem in the UK anywhere, wherever I go. Mm-hmm. Especially in Norwich. Like, Norwich is the vegan friendly city of the UK, so I'm super lucky.
Norwich is so
here.
Cool, yeah.
Very lucky, yeah. So it's very exciting times.
Very exciting.
It is racy, isn't it?
Did we gossip about our award win yet or not? I don't remember.
No. Why are you upside down?
Oh, I don't know. No, but that's because you're seeing me on Skype. But remember, the listeners can't see me upside down.
I know, but it's very hard to talk to you because it's like I'm talking to your chin.
Oh, don't be fussy.
Oh, that's better.
I need a wee. You're lucky I didn't go for a wee. But you can tolerate me being upside down for a bit.
Don't take the phone with you if you're going to go for a wee. Thank you.
Yeah, we did. We were finalists. Isn't that lovely, darling?
It's so exciting. It was just amazing to even be in that list of finalists. You know, we've been going for not even a year.
Yes, it was Gwyneth.
We were really, really excited. So I feel super proud of us.
Just really gushy.
I feel super proud. And I just want to thank all of our listeners.
I love the point where you then do the crime, because that's the point where you actually got the joke.
I couldn't pull out even a pretend cry. I was so happy until that moment.
Yeah, that's cool. Very cool.
And, of course, the winner was Roots and All. Sarah Roots and All. So very deservedly won that.
Yeah, she does a good job. And you know, sometimes when someone wins an award that you hoped you'd win, you end up saying like, oh yeah, I really think they deserved it, blah, blah, blah. And most of the time you don't mean it, but like this time I mean it. You know? Sorry, am I too honest?
No, it's true. It's totally true.
You know what I mean? Like, it's a very English thing, and it's kind of like, well, they were worthy winners, blah, blah, blah. But this time it's really,
She is a worthy winner. Yeah. And we hope that we might get her on the podcast as well.
Yeah, little collab. We might get her involved in a bit of gossip.
Ooh.
What do you reckon?
Absolutely. It'd be fair.
Have I said too much?
No.
get that mum look.
No.
Sorry, I'm playing with a Yankee candle here and I've got it all over my hands.
Well, I do have a question for you, actually, before we round on up. How do you merge your worlds together? Like, so you're travelling quite a lot. So, you know, you're overseas and you're back in the UK and you might be in China, but you might be in Europe or da-da-da, all around. How do you kind of merge it all together? How do you plan out all your work, like, How does it work for you? Do you make it work?
You'll need two sets of cutlery. How do you make it work? Do you know what? I don't know. I think as a person, I'm quite instinctive, and I know it's going to sound really wet, but I just kind of, oh God, this is going to sound wet, but I just trust in the universe. I don't know. Stuff just happens.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I don't stress and worry too much about individual things. So like, for example, this week, like various kind of events and flower shows I've sent off kind of like prices to, or kind of like, you know, just kind of pictures. But I won't kind of sit back and worry about those. That's gone out into the world.
Yeah.
If it comes back into me, that's great.
Yeah.
So I guess, yeah, just follow my instincts. And like, you know, I'm fairly, you know, you're fairly organized anyway, darling, aren't you? Because
we're similar.
Diary and annotations. So yeah, just like that, really. And just building where you're going to be when, and then as best as you can, book the work around it. Sometimes something might need a shuffle, but yeah, it just kind of works so far.
I think we're super similar, because I have a diary layout just like you do, where all the dates are there and I know what I'm doing. And but I think the most important thing for me, it's actually a conversation I had literally just last night, that I really genuinely believe that the universe makes it happen.
Definitely.
Literally, and no, it will be what it will be, you know?
Yeah, and just be calm, be nice, be efficient as a person.
Yeah.
What was the other? I had another bit of advice sitting there. What was it? Damn it. It was really good as well. oh, God.
It was so good you forgot.
Brain freeze at this age. Oh, God.
This age. How are you feeling being 40?
All right, really. My teeth look quite white on Skype.
They do, don't they? They look almost as white as mine.
How do I feel at 40? I feel fine. That is the answer to that one. I'm still trying to think of this other bit, because I had something really momentous to say to you. Damn it. What the hell was it? Oh,
my
God.
Hair is so long.
I know. Look, it's down to my
beard. Are you going to perm it?
I'm not sure.
Why not?
But whenever I do a top knot, my partner Rafael is really embarrassed. Like,
yeah, I guess. If I agree with Rafael, I think that you need to perm it. That would look super cool. Because you can shave. You're a bloke.
You
can
just, you in a minute.
You could just shave it off if it looks rubbish, can't you?
No, true, actually. Yeah, so back to that schedule thing and the amazing thing that I was going to say to you. I really want to say it.
Well, if you can't remember it, you can't remember it.
No, but this has stressed me out now that I can't remember it.
Is this because you're in China?
I know what it is. Yeah. I know what it is, darling.
Okay.
It is just, keyword, be reactive. because a lot of people are not able to be reactive. So, like, they will turn down stuff because they've perhaps already got something that's happening or blah, blah, blah. But actually, just kind of have a diary that is set. But also be reactive as well. If you do need to kind of shuffle something, or very often the person will be chilled about shuffling, or they might want to shuffle it anyway. And just believe that anything is possible. Do you know what I mean? So just don't be too square about stuff. You know, stuff can change and move in order to accommodate stuff sometimes. Or, you know, even if you've got a flight book, that could still be changed. I just think the kind of strap line there is not reactive. It's just kind of like anything's possible. Do you know what I mean?
Anything's so
kind
possible.
That's how I approach it. Obviously the first thing I do is say yes to everything and then realise that everything's possible. So there you go. They tie in really well.
Amazing. And can I just say that this little gossip section has been nothing to do with plants, really, but it's been great for life coaching. A nice little chat about how to like handle
I
life.
Don't know. And the other thing that I think people often do is they will start off a project and they'll get really pig-headed that they need to finish that project, which is great. Of course, you need to finish off projects. It's a good practice to do. But sometimes if that project in the meantime has become irrelevant or not as topical or whatever, a lot of people find it hard to let go of that project and they'll still waste their time finishing it. But I think, like, I learned specifically from my time with Thomas Morgan, kind of like, if the horse you're backing then doesn't look like it's going to win, then obviously then you need to jump and back another horse. And I think a lot of people are too rigid sometimes to do that. Mm-hmm. But I kind of like, I'd like to be reactive. So, you know, I was building a Weird and Wacky Plant website this time last year, but then I realized that wasn't really the best investment of my time. So I kind of put that on the shelf rather than kind of use my time to do that. So that would be my tip number three. 3A.
You're nuclear, darling. You are absolutely nuclear.
I'm just doing stuff. That's all it is, really.
Okay. Yeah. Michael's told us all about his nuclear reactivity, and we've had a good discussion about life coaching, and I agree with all of that. Thank you so much, MP.
Just doing stuff.
Just get on with it. I was always like, just do it. Just get on with it. And my mantra's always in, make it happen. Just make it happen.
Yeah. JFDI.
What's JFDI?
Gareth, don't cut this out. Just f***ing do it. If he cuts that out, I'll be...
Today's podcast partner is VeggiePod, the integrated all-in-one garden bed suitable for anyone interested in growing your own. You'll be amazed at how quickly your vegetables grow in a VeggiePod. And as a special offer for our listeners, VeggiePod are offering PPP subscribers 10% off any sized VeggiePod when purchased with a stand or a trolley. Simply go to veggiepod.co.uk and enter PBP10 on checkout.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Plant-Based Podcast.
Have a browse of the rest of the library or hop on over to the website, which is theplantbasedpodcast.net.
You'll also find our social media links. Please connect with us and let us know about any plant-based projects that you think we should be covering on the show.
And make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you'll be the first to hear the next episode. We're releasing once a fortnight. So until next time, enjoy the world of plants.